From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here again is your host, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. This week, of course, it's a panelist-led tour through some of the highlights, or depending on your point of view, lowlights, of the last few years on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Joining us now from her outpost in Houston, Texas, Ms. Kiri O'Connor. Hey, Kiri, how are you?
Good, thanks, Peter.
Kiri, we have asking everybody to name some of their favorite moments, or at least most memorable moments from the last few years. You picked, actually, an appearance by a Not My Job guest, namely Al Michaels.
Yes, sports fan that I am, I did. I picked Al Michaels' Not My Job, which was, you know, remarkable for its, not only his performance, but, you know, that hallmark pure Al humor that is, you know, one of the mainstays of Wait, Wait.
Now, Al Michaels joined us during a short break from his broadcast of the NBA playoffs in the early summer of 2006.
And now the game where we ask people to come in and answer questions about things they know nothing about. It's a game we call Not My Job. Speaking of games, nobody on the planet knows more about them than Al Michaels of ABC Sports. He's the guy, of course, who shouted, "Do you believe in miracles?" when the U.S. hockey team beat the Soviets at the 1980 Olympics. And since then, he's broadcast every big game there is, from the World Series to, of course, Monday Night Football, where he's done the play-by-play for 19 seasons. Currently, he is broadcasting the NBA playoffs, but since there's no game in the tube, he agreed to join us. Al Michaels, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Great to be here, Peter.
I'm amazed that you do so many different sports. You do the football, of course, on Monday nights. You do the NBA now. You've done baseball. You've done the World Series. Do you ever have trouble keeping them straight?
Not really, but it's a case of just, you know, growing up and loving every sport as a kid. Of course, you know, now in today's environment, you need to be more expert than ever in each individual sport. For instance, when I started at ABC, almost 30 years ago, they assigned me to a lot of auto racing. And I probably have done in my career, you know, 50 to 60 NASCAR races and IndyCar races, and I've even done the Grand Prix of Monaco four times. But I haven't done a race in some 20, maybe 4 or 5 years, and probably won't again, so I can let the cat out of the bag. I don't even know how to go to self-serve. I don't know a gasket from a carburetor, and here I am having done 60 auto races in the 1970s. You could get away with it then, but not now.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you about that. That's a good example.
But you can tell if something's going around and around,
exactly.
Can't you?
I was very good at that. I was very good at figuring out who was in what spot, and that's about it.
Yeah. I don't think you have to know how the car works to go, "Ooh, that one's faster."
You need a good analyst, and thank God I had a guy like Jackie Stewart, who was a multiple world champion, to do things like that. The great thing, Paula, about this business is you have to know where you can go, and don't go any farther than you need to go.
Now, there was one time, of course, where you went very quickly from being a sportscaster to basically a newsman, and that was, of course, during the 1989 World Series.
When we had the earthquake in San Francisco.
You were sitting there. You were getting ready to do the game.
5:04, yeah. We had just come on the air. We were actually in our pregame show, and I was with Tim McCarver and Jim Palmer. I was introducing Tim, and Tim was voicing over a piece of tape when all of a sudden it struck. And I, you know, having lived in California a lot of my life, I knew immediately what it was. And
so you got the prime space under the belt.
Fortunately, it only lasted about 15 seconds, Peter. That was the amazing thing. I mean, normally those quakes last longer, big quakes. But this one shook for 15 seconds. And the irony was that most of the people in Candlestick Park, and by that point, at least 50,000 people in the ballpark that held close to 60,000, they didn't know the severity of the quake, so they're chanting, "Play ball, play ball." And you know, people are making jokes about, you know, the quake was, we heard it's a 6.0, but the East German judge only gave it a 3.6, and that sort of stuff. But then, you know, the word began to filter back within, I'd say 20 minutes, that there was a section of the Bay Bridge had collapsed, there was a major fire in the Marina District of San Francisco, there was a pancake freeway in the East Bay, and then we all knew that, you know, this was a tragedy of major proportions, and it was 10 days before the World Series resumed.
And you were like doing ABC News reports from the scene.
I had to, because in the late 80s, yeah, you're going to bring out your people from New York, and Peter Jennings was on a plane the next morning and all of that. But I was the guy on the scene.
Yeah.
And we had one tremendous benefit that we had over the competition that night was the fact that we had the blimp in place because we had the blimp ready to go to work during the ball game. So I was able to see a lot with my own eyes.
And, of course, in that instance, another advantage, you were easy to pick out in the rubble because of your bright yellow blazers.
True. We'd already got a blue by that year.
Yeah. Well, Al Michaels, it is a pleasure to have you with us. Now, we have invited you here for once to play a game, and
okay.
We're calling this game this week...
Those goats seem particularly frisky today.
According to legend, that's how coffee was invented, or discovered, rather. An Ethiopian goat herd noticed his flock becoming particularly jumpy after chewing the beans of a strange bush. We learned about the legend of the frisky goats from the book Uncommon Grounds, A History of Coffee, from Mark Pendergrast. We have three questions for you about the beverage. Get three right. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, a hot steaming cup of Carl Kassel on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is sportscaster Al Michaels playing for?
Peter, Al is playing for Lauren Damewood of St. Petersburg, Florida.
All right. You ready to play? You came to play?
I'm ready.
You got your game face on?
I don't want to disappoint Lauren. This would be terrible.
All right. Here's your first question.
The pressure's on.
Coffee was first cultivated by the Arabs and spread from them to the Turks. In fact, coffee was so important to the Ottoman Empire that what? A, the very highest class of courtesan accepted only coffee beans as payment. B, an insufficient supply of coffee was grounds, as it were, for a woman to divorce her husband. Or C, the Grand Sultan employed a high official whose only job was to make sure the coffee can was kept closed.
Can you repeat A for me again?
Yeah, it was the very highest class of courtesan. I mean, the absolute primo babes of the Istanbul scene, if you were.
I just wanted to hear you say courtesan
yes.
Again. That's a great word. In fact, that may be a buzzword. During the NBA Finals, I don't know whether I'm going to get this right or wrong, Peter, but I'm going to use courtesan just for you in the finals.
Really? You're going to work that in?
Yeah, it'll be like,
shot,
oh, it looks
know,
like
anyway.
It looks like O'Neal just had to have a courtesan shot
that's
in
right.
His shoulder.
Courtesan shot and a blast of coffee. I'm going for A.
You're going to go for A. Courtesan's paid by coffee beans. No, I wish it was, because I have some coffee beans. It was B. It was an insufficient supply of coffee was grounds for divorce.
Oh, wow.
If it was really?
If a man could not provide, could not bring home the Italian roast, goodbye to him.
I'm not sure that's changed.
I can't go 3 for 3 now.
No, you can't go 3 for 3. But you can still, you know.
Guess you don't have your blimp helping you now, little buddy.
Here we go. Here's your second question. Coffee spread from the Turks to Western Europe, where it wasn't always received with good cheer. In France, doctors in the late 17th century called it a scourge of public health. Why? Was it A, it kept people from sleeping, the recommended 4 hours a night? B, it prevented them from drinking the more healthful alternative, alcohol? Or C, it made people too twitchy to allow for easy bloodletting?
It has to be B.
It has to be B. It prevented them from drinking the more healthful alternative alcohol.
Correct.
You're right. Very good.
Hey.
Yes. Yes, and it counts.
A public letter from doctors in Marseille written in 1679 said, quote, "We note with horror that this beverage has tended almost completely to disaccustom people from the enjoyment of wine." All right, very good. Last question. During the same period, the 17th century, the coffee house became the center of culture and politics in London. Naturally, the British coffee houses inspired some opposition from whom? A, a group of women not allowed in coffee houses who claimed that the drink made their men impotent. B, Puritan leaders who said that quicker thinking led to more sinful thoughts per day. Or C, the Royal Guild of British Mead Makers.
My first thought is that B's a little whimsical, but I'm not throwing it out yet. A is like women's, it's like suffrage, right, in the coffee world.
Not exactly.
Mm.
That wasn't their complaint. But, I mean, that may have been their cause for concern, but their specific complaint was different.
Give me C one more time,
C Peter. Was the Royal Guild of British Mead Makers. Mead, of course, being the honey-based alcoholic beverage. One of these groups objected quite stridently to the coffee houses.
No, that's a set-up answer. A. It's got to be A.
You're right, sir.
A.
Oh, yeah! It's good!
A group of anonymous women published a petition against coffee, a pamphlet, in 1674, which said of British men, quote, "They come from coffee houses with nothing moist but their snotty noses,
ew,
nothing stiff but their joints, nor standing but their ears."
You know what? I'm going to use all of that during the interview.
That's explaining the rise of Starbucks and Viagra at the same time.
Carl, how did Al Michaels do?
The miracle happened again, Peter. Al had two correct answers. He wins our prize for Lauren Damewood. Congratulations, Al.
Thank you. And to Lauren, this is phenomenal.
So, Carrie, you were a little charmed by him, it seems. Is this not true?
Oh, this is absolutely true. Who wouldn't be charmed by Al Michaels and, you know, his love of the word courtesan?
I know. It was great. One thing I don't know, and in fact, I doubt that he followed through in his promise to use that word.
Well, it was the NBA, so you know at least he used the word court.
That's true. And then he may just have muttered the... And now on the court, and thought he had fulfilled his promise. Because
yeah.
He's an honorable man. Kerry O'Connor, it's so great having you on the show, and we look forward to many more years with you.
Well, thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Kerry. This week we are indulging in a little navel-gazing, and we are doing it with the help of our panelists. Right now I want to welcome one of our original panelists. He has been with us for the entire 10 years of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Charlie Pierce, how are you doing today?
If I try to do this gazing at my navel, you're not going to be able to hear me.
That's true.
I'm doing it right now, and this isn't going to work.
No, lift up your head and speak clearly, Charlie.
Okay, can I gaze at someone else's navel?
If you can get someone to come into where you are and have a navel to gaze at, if that helps you, really. Anyway, Charlie, we asked you, of course, to mention some of the things you remember best or most from our past, and one of the things you came up with was something we're particularly proud of, because usually we just make fun of the news. On one occasion, at least, we made it when we actually broke a story. We were so proud. A little enterprise journalism from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. This is from the fall of 2006. Here we go. Paula, everybody knows, of course, Senator Barack Obama, very popular all around the country, but Nick Lovelady, a reporter for the Henry Daily Herald in Henry County, Georgia, really does not like him. He says that Senator Obama personally and maliciously prevented him from doing what?
Oh, my heavens. Urinating on the sidewalk.
People named Lovelady don't urinate on the sidewalk.
Although, interestingly, his name has an ironic relation to the story. He sort of prevented it from living up to his name.
Uh-huh.
Oh, from dating someone in particular?
Yes. He says that Senator Barack Obama prevented him from scoring with a cute chick.
Oh, no.
Let me explain. The somewhat ironically named Lovelady says he was trying to impress an attractive female news intern. And he was doing a pretty good job of it, if he says so himself, when he arose to ask Obama a question at a press conference. But Obama mistook him for a student journalist and then explained, quote, "You have such a baby face."
Mm.
Everybody laughed, including the intern, and that was the last that Lovelady ever saw of her. That's the sad part. That's the sad part. But this is the amazing part, and this is a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me exclusive. Must credit Wait, Wait, as Drudge likes to say. What you're about to hear is actual tape of U.S. Senator Barack Obama, Democrat of Illinois, reaching out to the reporter in question.
Lovelady newsroom.
Is this Nicholas?
This is he.
Nicholas, this is Barack Obama.
Hey, how's it going?
Man, I'm calling to publicly apologize for messing up your game. I read that. I felt terrible. I didn't know there were any ladies around.
Man.
I just wanted to let you know that, I'm deeply sorry. And, but if she was that superficial, she wasn't.
All right. Well, I really appreciate it.
Hey, okay, man.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
There you go. So, Charlie, it's hard not to be charmed by a man who would do that.
This is one of those, an interesting one, because this is one I came to as a listener.
Yes.
And I had a wonderful Scooby-Doo moment at the steering wheel of my car when I heard that. And it wasn't so much that Obama had done it, because he was on the show before, and we all know that once this presidential thing doesn't work out, he's going to be a panelist.
Right.
But the phrase, messing up your game, from the rising star of the United States Senate, was enough to get me off the road.
Now, next on your list, Charlie, was a moment that struck us as well when we were doing it. This was a show we did in New Hampshire in September of 07, and it wasn't so much what we did, it's what one of our listeners had to say when we got her on the phone. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Pam. I'm from Beaver Creek, Ohio.
Hey, what's going on in Beaver Creek?
Not much. I'm actually right now kind of working.
Oh, but, I'm sorry. I mean, right now, even as we speak, what job are you doing?
I am an OBGYN, and I'm waiting for a delivery.
Oh!
But I didn't want to miss my chance to be on the show.
Does the expectant mother,
yeah.
is she right there? Can we talk to her and see how she feels about this?
She's in the room. I'm at the desk.
How far apart are the contractions now? I just wanted to see how long we have for the segment.
Oh, she's doing every 2 to 3 minutes.
Oh, let's get going, Peter.
Quickly, then. Well, we were concerned, obviously, about the fate, not so much of our listener who won, but for the poor woman and her baby. So we actually got in touch with the OBGYN. Here she is. So, Pam, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell us, how is the baby?
Everybody did very well. Right. The baby did great, and mom did very, very well.
Did the mother ever find out where you had gone while she was in labor?
I did tell her, yes. Right after I had finished, I went in the room and told her.
And what was her reaction?
Since she was very comfortable with the epidural, she did think it was very funny.
She did. So she was, yes, like totally floating on cloud epidural and had no problem with it.
Exactly.
So presumably if you had come back and said, oh, I'm sorry, I just needed to bet on some horses, I was on the phone with my bookie, she would have been equally fine.
Probably.
Well, thanks. Congratulations to you and the baby, and congratulations again for winning our game.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Pam.
Bye-bye.
Charlie Pierce, one of our original panelists. It's been a great 10 years. We hope for at least 10 more.
Well, I don't think the world's going to get smarter or less silly, so I think we're probably in great shape.
There'll never be a shortage of material. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Judy and Steve Hopkins, supporting the Shakespeare Theater Company's production of Hamlet, starting May 22nd at Carter Baron Amphitheater in Washington, D.C. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Thanks to Carl Castle, Roxanne Roberts, Charlie Pierce, Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Kerry O'Connor, and all of our panelists, and to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.